We all know that women are not funny. And no one proves it better than Kay Ballard, the accidental lawyer who is the accidental host of our show. Of course, every accident that Kay Ballard encounters is intentional. And now her intention is to accidentally disprove the show's premise. So sit back and enjoy a fun conversation that matters between Kay and today's fabulous featured guest. Welcome to Women Are Not Funny Radio.
This is Kay Ballard, and I'm really glad you're here today because our guest, our featured guest, is Daria Pino, also known as Summer Tomato. And that's because her very popular blog and her very successful business is called Summer Tomato, summertomato.com. Daria has been a friend of mine for a very long time, but today will be my first opportunity to refer to her as Dr. Pino, and that's because recently she received her PhD from California State University in San Francisco, where she lives. Now, even though her PhD is in neuroscience, and one of the things that she does is advocate for all of us that we upgrade our health style. So we'll be talking with her today about that. Now, you may notice that I'm something of a fangirl when it comes to Daria. Please forgive me for that. I mean, I'd like to make fun of her, and I'll do my best, but I think she's terrific, and I know you will as well. Well, one of the things that my producer cautioned me against was calling Daria Summer, because I've slipped into the habit of doing that, which is hilarious given we've been friends for such a long time. But I so closely associate Daria with her work. And besides, the name Summer is not a bad one. I wonder if Daria would consider changing her name just to make it easier for me.
Daria Pino, I have to know, are you here today using your appearance on Women Are Not Funny Radio as a stepping stone to something better?
I told you, Kay. I can't believe you know that. So, yeah, I mean, I've never told anyone this before, but I really have a lot of aspirations to be on Saturday Night Live, and I thought this would be a fantastic start in the right direction.
Oh, my. Daria's on to something. Using an appearance on Women Are Not Funny Radio as a stepping stone to a gig on Saturday Night Live? It's my guess that the producers of that show listened to mine, looking for talent. In fact, it's rumored that Tina Fey got her start here. Of course, I'm the one who started that rumor, and there's absolutely no truth to it.
Here's the real question, the thing that worries me to death. By any chance, are you actually here to take over my show?
Of course not, Kay. I could never dream of owning the airwaves like you do.
Oh, well, you know, it doesn't surprise me that Daria Pino is a person with all the right answers. It's so wonderful to have her here today because for the very first time, I'm able to call her something, a name that she's worked very hard to deserve, and that is Dr. Pino. Dr. Pino, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kay. I actually prefer Dr. Tomato.
Dr. Tomato it is.
Daria recently completed her PhD at the University of California in San Francisco. Yay, Daria!
So tell me, what's it like to get a PhD?
It's really hard. I won't lie. It's very, very difficult. And you know, I'm very proud of myself for having gone through it. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone, but, you know, it's a good thing to have done, and I definitely learned a lot. There's no denying that.
Well, absolutely, and one of the very impressive things is that while you were working on your PhD, you were also simultaneously working on starting your very successful business, Summer Tomato. So that's why I suppose the name Dr. Tomato does actually fit.
That's right.
So, you know, one of the things that I noticed, and I do know you quite well, but preparing for this interview really opened my eyes to a lot of things. So you say it was a lot of work in school, but I can't help but notice that one of your activities was Pleasure Lab.
Busted.
I mean, am I making it up? Are you, you know, are you going to tell the truth about this?
I will tell the truth about this. I had a PhD in the lab of Dr. Samuel Pleasure. So we were the Pleasure Lab. And I am currently the Foursquare, I'm still the Foursquare mayor of the Pleasure Lab. I will have everyone know.
You know, the truth is, Daria, you're interested in everything. I mean, I can't help but notice. You're just interested in everything, and you get a lot of attention. You know, this is really funny. The thing that came to mind, the expression that came to mind when I was thinking about talking with you today is this expression, it girl. Do you know what an it girl is?
I might have heard of that. Why don't you let us know?
Well, the fact of the matter is, I've heard of it too, but I had the meaning all wrong because, and I'm glad I looked it up, because if I had called you today's it girl, it would be somewhat insulting. An it girl is actually an attractive young woman who receives media coverage unrelated to personal achievement. And that...
Yeah, not that.
That is just exactly the opposite of you. It's just been so much fun for me to watch you just build your career and build your portfolio, and you claim to be a geek. Man, are you ever. You are so geeked out, it's incredible.
Busted it again. You don't even know.
Well, I'd like to be revealing it for the first time here on Women Are Not Funny Radio, but it's generally known that Daria is one half of a Web 2.0 power couple. Her boyfriend is Kevin Rose, the founder of Dig, and together they have a really fun life, very geeky and very fun. You know? And this really is geeky. I have it on good authority that Daria and Kevin built their own in-house worm farm.
We have worms.
I mean, it's just kind of unimaginable. You know, a dog named Toaster and your very own worm farm. It's what people dream of, right?
And Toaster is inspired not by the kitchen appliance, but by the television sci-fi series Battlestar Galactica.
Daria and Kevin have a new little puppy named Toaster. It's a Labrapoodle, and it's adorable. Not only that, its antics are very well documented.
Yourself a sci-fi fan, how far does it go?
Medium. I love sci-fi movies. I don't go to like Trekkie conferences or anything like that, but I'm pretty geeky. I'm pretty geeky. I can hold my own in the geek circles.
Well, you absolutely do. See, one thing that just slays me, it's just because I keep up with you, darling, you know that. When you need a tote bag for the farmer's market, suddenly an organization springs up to crowdsource your tote bag. When I need a tote bag, I just am stuck with going to the department store.
Have you ever heard of Quirky.com? Spelled exactly like it sounds. It's this wonderful company and wonderful website. They develop products based on crowdsourcing. So truly, when the people at Quirky became aware that Daria needed a tote bag to protect her produce that she purchased at the farmer's market, they went into action and they set up a contest to design the perfect farmer's market tote bag. Now, apparently, the contest is over and the tote bag is headed towards production. Now, I know you're like me and you're like Daria. You want your pears to be pretty. But here is what I can't help but notice. When Daria wants pretty pears, the geeks of the universe come together and put up a contest to design the perfect farmer's market bag for her use. As for me, I can just walk around wanting pretty pears, but having no one care. Does it sound like I'm feeling sorry for myself?
And hopefully soon, in a couple months, we will have a finished farmer's market bag that actually will keep your produce from being crushed, which I cannot wait.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm complaining about and jealous of. If I had crushed produce, people would just say, well, so what? But if Daria has crushed produce, the geek community comes to the rescue and a project is born. It's really quite impressive.
Daria loves the LA Lakers. And everyone on Twitter knows this. She actually tweets their games live. And you know what? She can be brutal.
Yeah, well, the Lakers, though, have your heart, don't they? I mean, you really pound out the tweets when you're watching a game.
Oh, that's me behaving myself, too. I almost started a separate Twitter account just for my trash talking.
Well, I am a fake Lakers fan, in your honor. And it's the least I can do. I did learn that they're considered an older team because 7 of the players have hit the big 3-0.
Mm-hmm. That would make me old as well.
Exactly. What was that like, darling?
Turning 30?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it, sort of.
Yeah. It was the best, actually. My life got, like, a lot better the day I turned 30, and has only gotten better every single day since then. So I'm 31 now, and I absolutely love it. It was the best year of my life.
Your blog and your business and a lot of your writing, not all of it, is about food, and you do love food. But one of the expressions that you have come up with that I think is just genius, you talk about upgrading your health style. Now, that's brilliant. Who doesn't want an upgrade? We all want an upgrade. But instead of saying, oh, go on a diet or eat less or eat healthy, no, you say upgrade your health style. Now,
that's right.
You know, that was inspired.
Yeah, thank you. The idea was, it was really hard to get across, and I'm glad that, you know, you people like you do read it and get the right message, because my whole thing about food is and health is that I think there's a huge misconception that it's a sacrifice, and the way I look at it is it's the exact opposite. I eat better-tasting food. I feel better, I look better, I have a wonderful life around food and that doesn't involve diets. And so that was where the word, and upgrade is a little bit of a geeky tech software word as well. So I went with the word upgrade. And then for the health style, I mean, I don't feel like health should be separated from your style, from your life. It can't be. And also, everyone's different. So it's your health style, not my health style. We have our different health style based on, you know, what we need, what we do, what we like, what our genetics allows us to do. And that's the message I really want to get across to anyone who's, you know, wants to be healthier but doesn't want to sacrifice the quality of life.
Well, you do, and you do in a very big way, in a very elegant way. Here is a quote. You say, the best way to stay on a diet is for the food to taste amazing.
Absolutely.
I mean, that concept just turns it all around, don't you think?
Yes.
But I will notice, and please, please don't be offended, but even if you are, I must say it anyway. I can help but notice that you really overuse the words amazing and awesome. And I think there's a reason for that. It's because, Daria, you are both amazing and awesome.
I hope so. I try to be.
Well, that's just it. That's such a cool answer because you're really working to be. You know, you're really a good example for all of us in terms of just the lifestyle you lead. It looks like fun. And the things that you write about are all over the place. Now, I know when it comes to food, you consider yourself a foodie. What is the difference, do you suppose? Is there a difference between a foodie and a food lover?
No. And recently I've actually tried to use the word food lover and foodie interchangeably because I worry that the word foodie has become too eclectic, too elitist. And that's not at all the message that I want to give people. The message that I want to give is that people should love their food that they eat. And, you know, it doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be exotic. You just need to enjoy it. And that's the only thing I would like to, you know, tell people on that front.
Well, I consider myself a foodie, but I do understand where you're coming from about it being perhaps elitist. And from time to time, I could consider myself a food lover as well. But, you know, are you aware that not everyone loves food?
I am. It's weird.
Some people don't like to eat at all. I had never heard of this until recently, but apparently it is the case. They're not a lot, but there are people who just don't like to eat.
I feel very sad for those people because I find it to be one of the exquisite joys of life.
I don't make a practice of it, but one day I was watching Martha Stewart, and she had as her guest Barry Manilow. And in the interview, he revealed to her, and thereby to us as well, that he doesn't like to eat. Now, Martha Stewart expressed surprise, and I certainly felt some myself, because until that very moment, it had never crossed my mind that it would be possible not to like to eat. But apparently it is, and here we're not talking about not being hungry. Sometimes I'm not hungry, but I always like to eat. But now you know. Now, like me, you know the truth. There are people who simply do not like to eat, and Barry Manilow is one of them.
One thing that I remember is we were having a conversation one time some years ago, actually, about the possibility of collaborating on a cookbook. And at that time, at first, it looked like we might do it, but then we decided there really wasn't the time. And one of the things that you told me that I thought was just really cool and rather brilliant is you made a distinction, Daria. You said, it's not that I love to cook so much. I just like to eat well and live well, and I like to cook in order to be able to support that.
Right. yeah, it's true. I'm not Mrs. Domestic. And, I there was definitely a time, when I was in college, which is early college, and I have eras of college, but in early college, I could seriously barely boil water. I used to tell people I burn water because I would put it on the stove and forget about it. Cooking was really a process for me, and it's never been something that, I wasn't one of those kids that spent time in the kitchen with their mother. I was always more focused on geeky things, but it's not so bad. It's not so hard. And what's really amazing is that you can make things that taste delicious and almost as delicious as some of the amazing restaurants we have here in San Francisco. And so for me, cooking sort of came out of necessity because as a grad student, I couldn't afford to eat the way I wanted to eat like people do in San Francisco. And so I had to learn to make it for myself. But once I learned that as long as you start with good ingredients, it's actually not that hard.
Yeah, well, there are wonderful restaurants in San Francisco, as you have said, but one of the things that I've noticed over the last 20 years is that all across the United States, and surely in other parts of the world as well, there are more and more culinary institutes, and so there are more and more people who are really actually getting very good training, and the quality of the restaurants, the fine restaurants, has improved. There are more of them because there's simply more people who are qualified to work there. Does that ring true to you?
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot more. I love what is happening in the food movement, and I think it's really special, and I think we're going to enter a new era that's more food-centric, and that's really exciting.
Well, it must be exciting for you to lead the way there, because your blog and your writing has really gained some traction, and you have a lot of people who follow what you write. And I, speaking as someone who does, it's because it's just so great. You cover a breadth of topics, and that is very appealing to me. It's not a recipe blog, but they're recipes. It's not a gadget blog, but certainly as a geek and a gadget lover, there is that aspect of it. And then there is the food science part and all of the help in interpreting the research and the claims that are made. So you just cover a whole lot of things that are interesting to anyone who wants to enjoy food and have good health.
Yeah, you know, that was a real challenge when designing the website, because you know, I had to sort of convey all those things, and that's why the menu on my website is so big and so prominent, because you know, I wanted to make sure that people knew that these are all the different topics that they could explore at Summer Tomato.
Yeah, well, and it just, your topics are varied, and your posts just seem to come at exactly the right time for things that I'm interested in, and so I assume you're writing it specifically for me. You say, I wonder what Kay wants to be reading about today, and then you write
exactly
it.
That's exactly what I do.
Well, I fail to tell you frequently enough how much I appreciate that, but I really do. Now, one of the things that you've done that's been kind of interesting to me is that you have taken something that I associate with grandmas, and you've tried to bring it into the 21st century mainstream, and that is, of course, pressure cookers.
I love the pressure cooker.
You do love a pressure cooker. You know, I think there are a lot of people your age who don't even know what one is.
Seriously, there is nothing that Daria can do to persuade me to take up cooking with a pressure cooker. I just do not need things in my kitchen that might explode. You know, I'm adventurous, but there are limits. Kitchen adventures, well, not too into them. But I'm totally impressed that she is. I think it's cool, just not for me.
I won't even pretend that I'm encouraged to try one, but I am fascinated by the fact that you love them, because one of the things, I think it speaks to our busy lifestyle, and of course, pressure cookers save fuel as well as time, but when I hear about how happy someone is that it only takes 4 or 5 minutes to cook her beans instead of 20, you know, I say, that is a woman in a hurry.
You are listening to Women Are Not Funny on Jackalope Radio 105 FM.
Some of your, you've had some interesting posts about the topic of getting men, in particular one man, to eat something. Do you think that's generally something going on in kitchens in America? Men are resistant to vegetables?
Absolutely. I've heard so many stories from women who are, you know, excited about what I write, and you know, they want to explore things in the kitchen, but they write to me and they say, Daria, I love what you say, but my husband is, you know, he'll only eat the white bread, or he'll, you know, he gets very upset if I don't make potatoes, or, you know, he won't try this eggplant and I want to try it. And, you know, I try to provide gateway recipes for those sorts of ingredients, like eggplants and Brussels sprouts, and there are a few that sort of make, you know, a lot of people turn their nose up and go, ugh. But my general advice for people in those situations is to go and get that ingredient at the farmer's market instead of at the grocery store, because the farmer's market version will taste substantially better, and you'll have a much better success rate. And then just don't tell them what it is. Just stick it in there and be like, you know, make sure you have enough other food just in case they're going to be stubborn. But, you know, just try and make sure you have a recipe that'll just knock you out, you know, that's so good that nobody can resist it. And you'd be shocked at how many people convert to Brussels sprouts and eggplant. It really is effective.
Yeah, well, I think so. I think a lot of people who don't like vegetables have just never eaten them prepared well.
And, right, exactly.
So that's part of it. But I've also felt like the way to get men to eat anything is to turn it into a French fry. I think roasted vegetables maybe fill the bill there. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. That's my number one trick. So my cauliflower recipe is definitely my most popular recipe. And basically I just roast some cauliflower with a tiny bit of curry powder and some salt and a little olive oil, and it just makes it crisp, and the flavor is concentrated, so it's sweet and crunchy and delicious, and people just go nuts over it. And I do the same thing with squash. Kevin calls them my squash French fries. And I make a little delicata squash in the oven, and it's a fantastic trick. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. I do it with green beans and broccoli, call it shock broccoli. And
kale is another good one.
Yeah, you know, so tell me how you prepare kale to make it. People are talking about kale chips, and I don't think I've ever done that. Is it the same?
It's really easy. You just, that's probably the easiest thing to do. I should post this recipe. I will. Basically, you just take some kale, shred it up with your hands into a bowl, and just, you know, chip-sized chunks. It can be a little bigger than chips, because they will dehydrate down a little bit. But just coat them in a teensy bit of olive oil, sprinkle up some salt. You can add other things. A little paprika is good, a little maybe garlic salt or something like that. But it doesn't matter. They're good plain. And you just spread them out on a cookie sheet and put them in the oven. I forget the temperature, maybe around 400. And then just in about 15 minutes, you know, they're crispy and tasty, and people love them. People absolutely love them.
Have you noticed on the web, bacon gets a lot of love?
Would somebody explain this bacon thing to me? I mean, I like bacon, but what is the deal with bacon? People go nuts over bacon, don't they?
It was like sort of food porn sites where this is why we're fat, stuff like that. And I think it's a reflection of a culture that has lost its way in the food department. We don't have a normal relationship with food anymore, and so people act out in these strange ways.
Well, I agree, and I think the answer is just to upgrade your health style. Well,
right.
One of the things that you have done recently, which is very cool, and I have to say that I have taken advantage of your offer. I'm not going to tell anyone what you're charging for it, because it is just obscene, my dear. I don't, you know, they wouldn't even believe the bargain you are offering, but you have a wonderful new membership program called Tomato Slice.
That's right. Yes, it's a whopping $3.99 a month, which, you know, the reasoning behind the pricing was, I would like to make a little bit more than I did as a grad student at some point in my life. Right? I'm not there yet, but that's one motivation. But the other motivation is I have noticed that the quality of the dialogue, I mean, we're talking a dollar a week. I mean, this isn't really keeping anybody out in a you know, in a, for financial reasons. But what you get is you get people who are committed. And so you mm-hmm. have a community where you have a much higher dialogue than you do if something's just free and open. Because, you know, like you mentioned before, you know, I have a lot of random followers on the web who just want to cause trouble. You know, and so if you have something that's open to everyone, people will come in and they'll take away the value there for everyone else. And so just having a very low price range, price point, you can get, you know, you filter out all the people who just don't care. And then you're left with quality. And that is, to me, the biggest advantage of joining the newsletter and the show, because we have already had amazing conversations with newsletter subscribers, and it's just going to get better. And so if you really, really care, it's a much better community.
Well, it's very cool. And one of the things that is cool for me in knowing you and has been in the almost 3 years that I've known you is just watch you create your life and create things in your life. And so just the process, seeing the process of this thing come to be is really fun. And you are doing streaming video as part of it, and you are quite the star. I watched your first show, and you know, nerves of steel, you went on for about an hour and a half, and it was vitally interesting content, but you were very, very smooth and very well prepared, and you acted like you have been in front of the camera your entire life, which you almost have, right?
You know what's funny, Kay, is I was actually really, really nervous, and you can see it, actually, if you look, but you know the part that makes me nervous is not talking about science and not talking about food, those things I can, you know, riff all day. The issue was at the very beginning, you know, I'm supposed to be a salesman and tell everybody who I am, talk about myself, which I'm not good at, and also just plug the show, which I just feel so awkward asking people, you know, to support me when, you know, and so that part made me really nervous. But once I got going, yeah, I felt much more comfortable. And I think all that stage fright will disappear in the coming shows.
Yeah, well, it certainly wasn't apparent to a viewer, and in this case, a viewer who thinks she knows you pretty well. You did a great job, and your entire show is actually devoted to a very specific and well-thought review of this book that is quite the phenom, The 4-Hour Body by Timothy Ferris. You know, I know he's a friend of yours, and I have to tell you, I also am a fan. I'm not proud of this, but I think he's rather sexy, although I also think he's really, really weird. He kind of reminds me, you know who he reminds me of? Kind of a Howard Hughes sort of guy, you know?
Very eclectic.
Eclectic and eccentric, and someone who is admired for very good reasons. You know, he has lots of admirers and fans, but he is definitely not mainstream, even though he's very, very popular in the mainstream. And so
right.
He's written his book that deals with things that you as a food scientist, and you have been in this field in a very big way for a long period of time, deal with as well. He's your friend, and you get tons of questions about the book and about him, and so you just took it head on. How did you come up with that decision? Was it a tough decision to make?
It wasn't that tough, actually. Part of the reason is because the structure of the book is so all over the place that normally, you know, if a new diet book came out, I would just write a review because actually that's it's easy almost. Because you can just sort of go through and take your notes and then write out a coherent review. However, this book is all over the place. It was, you know, it goes from diets to exercise. He even talks about steroids. He talks about sleep. He talks about sex. He talks about all this crazy stuff. And I didn't feel like I could do a real thorough review on paper. But I know that I'm getting bombarded with questions. And so I was like, you know what, let's just have a conversation. I'll give my 2 cents on the book, you know, for half an hour, and then you guys can just ask me whatever you want.
Yeah, well, it was great. And I bought the book.
Everyone who knows me, and even some people who don't know me, know that I love my Kindle. I even refer to myself as the Kindle pimp. I have a website, kindlepimp.com. I thought that Timothy Ferris's book, For Our Body, would make excellent Kindle food, so I ordered it in pre-order. But do you know, I managed to remove it somehow. Now, this is not a permanent problem because Amazon keeps a record of the books that you purchase, but I still haven't figured out how to get it back on my Kindle. Oh dear, a wannabe geek who's a klutz, that's me. Sometimes my Kindle doesn't love me as much as I love it.
I feel like I know it quite well because I read a lot of reviews and also then listened to yours. One of the things that was so charming is you said, and you were very, very upfront about what you felt about everything he wrote. And in fact, you used the statement, you said that your opinions are not influenced by anyone. And I thought, really? You're not influenced by anyone? That's amazing. Once again, amazing.
I don't know what to make of that statement. I'm not influenced by anyone. In my own case, I'm influenced by anyone, everyone, and everything. Of course, I have my own opinion, and I'm not always going to agree with you. I think what Daria means is that she cannot be influenced to write a positive review of a book she doesn't believe in.
But it was, you were very objective in your review of the book, even revealing that he is a friend and that you like many things about the book.
Mm-hmm. I was actually a big fan of Tim before we met. I was a fan of The 4-Hour Workweek, which was his first book. And
right.
You mentioned at the beginning of the show that I got a PhD while simultaneously launching a website and writing career, and The 4-Hour Workweek enabled me to do that. And so, you know, once I did finally meet him, I was very excited about that. I think he had great ideas. I think he's very smart and very thorough. But I know he has this sort of sensationalist aspect about him, too. I haven't talked to him about my review yet, but I think that he would appreciate, you know, the way I approached it. I think I was fair.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you did it with good humor. I think he would have been very appreciative of the tone, and particularly you liked a lot of the things that he said. And
mm-hmm.
But one thing that you said that was really very, very amusing is, my friend likes to sell books and knows how to sell books. So I thought that was also astute, very, very astute, because he has certainly done that. This book has caught the imagination of a whole sector of American people and probably worldwide as well.
Yeah, I only hope to learn those skills from him one day.
One thing that your writing does, though, in addition to the things we've talked about, is you deal with the fact that there are so many studies and so many studies that contradict each other, and it drives us all crazy as we are trying to determine what is true and what is healthful and what we really want to be eating in order to improve and maintain our health. And so for you to help us with an analysis and come at it as a scientist does, it's really, really very useful. I get so frustrated. I mean, I'm still at the point, I read it all, not like you, but I read it all. And so I don't know about caffeine, for example, after reading probably 300 articles about whether caffeine is good for you or harmful to you. I don't know. I just know I like coffee.
Do you love coffee? I like coffee. I love coffee. I buy every kind. I buy Illy from Italy. And I buy hazelnut from little online coffee boutiques. And I also buy a big favorite of mine, Kroger Supreme. But here's the truth. I may claim to love coffee, but what I really love is hot brown water. Yeah, when it comes to coffee, I'm a weakling. But I love that hot brown water.
The issue of how the media portrays the science, and even how the scientists themselves portray their own work, It's incredibly frustrating, not just to you, but for those of us who actually know what they should be saying and know that they aren't saying it. And, you know, I definitely do my best to untangle all that for people, but there's a lot of subjects, and some of it is so convoluted with politics, and that sometimes it's hard to get the truth out. Sometimes we don't know still. So that opens the door for a lot of scammers to come in, and or not necessarily scammers, but people with an agenda to, you know, make their claim. And when the science isn't really conclusive, it's easy to do. As far as caffeine, though, everything I've seen says it's safe, even to some extent in pregnant women. And unless you are doing massive amounts of cocaine every day and you're giving yourself heart palpitations, you should be fine. And coffee is actually good for you, as is tea. The soda is not so much, but the coffee and tea are both helpful sources of antioxidants and other good stuff.
Well, one kind of tea that I have seen on your website is one that I'm intrigued by, and I actually own some Pu'er tea, yes, and I have a good bit of it. It's my understanding that it is tea that is even better aged.
It is, that's correct. Pu'er is aged tea.
Yeah. So do you think it's particularly healthful, or do you just like the flavor of it?
Well, that's a good question. It's different, so it has more, it's been more oxidized usually, and you know, sometimes aging can bring out other benefits. I'm not sure about the health benefits of pu'er. I haven't read about them. It definitely has less caffeine because some of the caffeine will dissipate with aging. But generally, I mean, it's just tasty. I think it's great for people who love coffee because it's roasty
it
and rich.
It is tasty. It is tasty, but Daria, what I was told is that it's highly valued, particularly as it ages. And the older it gets, the more it tastes like furniture polish. And so when you had some really valuable pu'er tea, it's because it's reached a stage that it tastes a whole lot like furniture polish. So that's what I have to look forward to.
Do you remember the idiots? Maybe you were one who thought they were going to make a fortune on collectible Beanie Babies? They actually saw Beanie Babies as an investment? Well, I didn't fall for that, but I must confess, I'm a pu'er tea investor. I bought a number of bricks of pu'er tea from a gentleman living in Missouri of Chinese origin, who travels there frequently and imports pu'er tea. He persuaded me, and it wasn't hard, because really, I'll kind of go for anything, that bricks of pu'er tea, when aged, become very, very valuable. So all I would need to do is buy my pu'er tea, drink some, but save the rest of it until it was aged enough to have that much-desired furniture polish flavor. And then I would have quite a fortune on my hands. Yes, I would be a pu'er tea magnate. I would be a pu'er tea mogul. As it is, I'm just a mogul in waiting.
Well, what about artificial sweeteners? Where do you stand on those these days?
I think they're very scary. And the data is confusing because there's so much politics involved. This is one of those situations where, you know, Donald Rumsfeld is involved in getting aspartame, you know, accepted by the FDA, and then Monsanto bought it, and you know, and then these studies come out, and you know, then rebuttals come out, but they're sponsored by people you don't trust, and so you don't really know which science to believe. But worse, you know, but all these are sort of trying to prove: do these substances cause cancer? Even if they don't, which you know, there's some compelling evidence suggesting they might. Even if they don't, however, they still sort of hijack your brain, and they tend to make people overeat. If I saw data that, so for me, the most compelling data is the fact that people who use them aren't any thinner. So if they're not helping people be thinner, what's the point? Why is this the cancer?
Yeah, that's a very good point. There are more and more artificial sweeteners, and people are not getting any smaller. I can remember buying Splenda, reading about Splenda, and actually buying it in Canada before it was legal in the U.S. But I think it's tasty, but everything I read about it makes me believe I shouldn't be eating a lot of it.
Yeah. I'm skeptical of them. Stevia is slightly different. It is natural-based. Tim actually said in his book that he thought it might be helpful. I haven't read the data on stevia yet, which I plan to do. So I will keep you posted on that.
Well, that is lovely. You know, one, I quoted you earlier, but here's another quote of Daria Pino, Dr. Daria Pino. And here we're talking about Dr. Tomato. You said, and I wonder if it's really true. I'm about to find out, I think. You said that you couldn't pay me enough to eat a Pringle.
That's true. I feel like Pringles are like the sweepings from a potato chip factory that have been like pressed into the shape of a chip. Like I just can't imagine what is in there, but they're not made out of food, which terrifies me, Kay. I can't imagine.
But you talked about how you want to improve your income from its student status. You know, maybe that would be the way to take bidders. You know, how much would it take to make Daria Pino eat a Pringle? What would it really take? Would she, you couldn't pay me to eat a Pringle? Wouldn't you consider, you know, if someone really, 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 really wanted you to eat a Pringle, would you consider it if the price were right?
Well, are you going to put me to the test?
No, I'm just being mean. Because
I don't know. Come with your bids. We'll see, everyone.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a challenge. Throw down that challenge.
Do I have to keep it down? Technicalities here.
One of the things that you have talked about is the expense of the sort of beef you would be willing to eat. Because you are real careful about what you eat, and you are very careful about the beef that you eat, even though you love it. But you point out that the kind you like, the kind that you're willing to eat, is so expensive, you certainly can't eat a lot.
That's right. And I think that's a really important point. Americans tend to forget how cheap our food is. And, you know, traditionally, meat has been more expensive because it's harder to create. It's harder to grow. And what's happened in our culture is these government subsidies have driven down the price of corn and soy so much that we have these huge surpluses that they started training cows to eat that, even though it's not their natural food. Their natural food is grass. So these cows are being force-fed this cheap food, and therefore it's incredibly fattening food. So we have these very fat cows that are being grown on a much lower budget. So it's much, much cheaper. But if you don't want these animals that are eating food that they weren't meant to eat, that are being given hormones to grow faster, that are being given antibiotics because they live in such horrid conditions that they would all be sick if they didn't, if you don't want to eat that kind of meat, you have to go back to the real pricing of food. And, it's not cheap. And, you know, but we don't need to eat that much meat to be healthy or to be happy. So I think that's a really important thing for people to understand is that they think what I eat is expensive, but the reality is what they eat is deceptively cheap. It's not honest. It's not honest food.
Mm-hmm. Expensive in a different way.
Well, it's the real price of food. It's just relative. It's a mind problem.
Daria, one of the things that I loved about you from the very first is actually even the name of your blog, because the term summer tomato is something that really resonated with me. It's the difference, isn't it, between a food that is okay and one that is amazingly delicious?
So I came up with the name summer tomato just sort of randomly out of the air, but it stuck because it's so cute and encapsulates so well what my message is, which is exactly what you just said. I was really, really happy when I don't know if you saw the movie Food, Inc. If you haven't, it's remarkable. You should watch it. But at one point during that film, Michael Pollan, who's a wonderful food journalist who I respect greatly, he wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma, he actually talks about tomatoes, and he says, what we get in the grocery store, it's not really a tomato. He goes, it's a notional tomato. That's what he called it. He said, but this is nothing you would ever find in nature. And that's exactly the point. Like those round orbs that are at the grocery store, even the ones with little stems, you know, those are not what I'm talking about.
No, they're not indeed. And you shop a lot at the farmers market and really advocate that. I like to do that as well. And then I had the wonderful experience some years ago of being a member of a consumer-supported agriculture farm and realized the difference between eating not only fresh, farm-grown, picked the day before or that day, but tomatoes that had never been refrigerated. It's just
right.
It's just amazing. But
I never refrigerate my tomatoes.
Another way that tomatoes are really good, as far as I'm concerned, and it's a way you can have a good tomato in the winter, is canned tomatoes. But you let me know that even canned tomatoes can have some risk because of the way they're canned.
They can, yes, but generally canned tomatoes are one of my favorite canned vegetables. You just have to be careful with the bisphenol A, the BPA, that can be in the can linings. But some of the organic brands are making those without BPA now. Or you can get the glass jars.
Oh, you're just such a wonderful source. And, you know, someone I totally trust. It's so much fun to be able to get information from someone that I know, someone that I totally trust. And this new tomato slice is going to be that opportunity for everyone because, amazingly, I can't believe you're doing this, but you're actually going to give people email access to you to ask their food questions.
Yep.
What a brave woman you are.
I know. I know. It makes me a little bit nervous. That's why the good thing, though, is that it tends to be that if somebody has a question, a lot of people have that question. I have everybody's group email, so I can just send out the answer to everyone at once. And so that I'm hoping that that sort of strategy will cut down on the volume. So far, it's been fantastic. So far, I've had nothing but excellent questions and suggestions from readers. So I'm excited about it. We'll see how it goes. I think if it's more than I can manage, then that means I'm doing something right, because that means I have a lot
of
subscribers.
I'm not worried about that. I see two more likely scenarios. This is what I can see happening. One is just an opportunity to connect with people who are interested in reading what you have to say in a very personal way and knowing what they want to read about. So, yes, your friend Tim likes to sell books, but you can write the perfect book because it will contain answers to questions that people actually have. The other
right.
thing is that you lead a charmed life in the whole geek kingdom. Probably 30 different developers will spring up from nowhere and come up with some sort of application where you can give push-button answers to all the common questions that people have. I can see it's the next startup, you know. It's being formed right now. Daria, you know I adore you, and you know that I have good reason to. I'm so happy that you came by today to Women Are Not Funny Radio.
Well, now, that was just a barrel of laughs. You have been listening to Women Are Not Funny Radio,
a New Media International production. On behalf of Kay Ballard, her fabulous guest, and the secretly hilarious Women Are Not Funny team, thanks for being here. This is Aaron James Lee, one of the producers of the show, putting up with Kay Ballard for yet another week, and also reminding you that you can listen to our replays anytime you please by going to our website at womenarenotfunny.com. And don't forget to subscribe via iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Are you still here? One more thing. Don't forget to join us again next week for another episode of Women Are Not Funny Radio.